Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're going to sit here and talk about cars for the next couple of hours. You're more than welcome to join us, and this is how you do it. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You got good levels?
Yeah, good levels.
All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. So Nate can handle diesels, Chevy, Ford, Dodge. Not necessarily in that order. Let me change that. Ford.
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 We work on them all. I can handle it.
Yeah. I know. And then, but you're letting me teach you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so it's the same. Ford. And I'm going to get a lot of calls on this, and I don't care. Ford. And then Chevy. And then Dodge.
Not necessarily in that order either, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
It
depends on the week.
I'm just sticking my finger in their belly and spinning around. You know what I mean? Because we'll get a call on that. But what do you drive?
What do I drive right now, Ford?
When did you hit your head?
Last week.
Did you get one? Is it a new one? Or
No, it's an older one. I like the antiques.
The 6-liter?
No, 573.
Oh.
Yeah.
You told me about that.
Yeah.
I was jealous about that because the 7.3 is like the 327 Chevy, or the 350 better yet.
Sure.
It never broke. It was perfect. And I understand that the guys with the 7.3, I know up north it's this way. They're getting the sticker price for the 7.3s of today.
They are. I had a friend sell one on eBay, $25,000 for his 7.3.
And that can be, what year did they first come out with the 7.3?
Power stroke was 94.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a vehicle that's 26 years old that they're getting $25,000 for.
That's crazy.
And I'll bet he had more calls than he ever imagined.
I'm sure he did, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. There was somebody up in Payson that put like a 7.3 in there for like $9,000. So I sent him an email and I said, you know, I'm interested, so whenever it's my turn in line, you know, and somebody calls back and says, we need some deposit money. And I said, where's the truck? And they said, well, you have to do a deposit with a credit card before you do the truck. So I thought, this is not anything I want to do, but it's in the paper.
Wow.
So I just backed out. And,
yeah.
You know, it kind of, if it smells like a rat, and, you know, smells, looks like a rat and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, then definitely. That's odd.
And then it was gone within 2 days. The ad was gone within 2 days. And there's a friend of mine that works there, and I was going to ask him, you know, is there some relationship there? Did you guys cancel that ad or whatever? And I didn't do it, and I didn't care.
Right.
So what'd you do to the 7.3?
I haven't done much to it other than put it back together. It was in rough shape, so it's got an intercooler on it, aftermarket, you know. Mm-hmm. It's an old body style, so 94 to 97, that genre.
Okay.
But manual trans, I rebuilt the trans. It was grinding. Had to put a front timing cover on it. It was leaking coolant. Did a bunch of work to it and been driving it ever since.
And love it.
Yeah.
And with relationship to acceleration, cold start, idle quality, how did it stack up to the Dodge you had?
Well, idle quality, it'll never match that. The Dodge was smooth.
Okay.
For sure. Anything that's newer is going to be obviously nicer. Hands in quotation marks, you know.
Acceleration?
Acceleration's nice.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets up and goes.
I'm not. Your Dodge was a single turbo a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's what I want to compare it to,
sure.
Not the twin turbo that you ended up with.
No. Well, anything newer is going to have more horsepower and torque. So obviously you're dealing with, what, 230 horse on an old 7.3-ish?
I know, but there's no substitution for cubic inches.
Sure. No, there's not. The torque the motor has is amazing. So, yeah.
So is this something you're going to buy and sell? If you say yes, then I'm going to get 100.
Maybe.
Okay. All right.
Maybe.
Okay. So it's is it a 3/4 ton truck or a 1 ton?
3/4 ton.
3/4
crew cab, 4x4.
Crew cab.
Yeah.
4x4 manual.
Manual.
That's a hunting wagon right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to throw a number out there?
No, I'm not throwing anything out right now, but yeah, it'll climb over anything for sure.
Yeah. I remember one guy said it'll climb a wall. And then he winked at me, and I said, "Okay, it just separates him from the rest of the pack,
right?
You know, but it's true; it's not going to climb a wall."
Right.
602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, Nate is a diesel guy. Chevy, Ford, Dodge. You got any other nameplates you want to raise your hand on?
Nissan's got the Cummins in it now. We're starting to see those.
Okay.
Ford, Chevy, Dodge in their half-ton market. Okay. That's pretty amazing. Those trucks are way neat.
Okay.
Starting to see those as well.
Okay.
So, I'm trying to think of what other stuff we see.
I'm looking at a bigger vehicle on a chassis, and it's got the DD16. I think it's a 600-horsepower Detroit.
Okay.
You ever work on any of those?
No, that'd be over us, I think, yeah.
What do you think of the Detroit versus the Cummins?
Detroit used to be very questionable, but yeah, right now I think they're amazing power plant.
Okay.
For sure.
Because they got 400 horse, 500 horse, 600 horse.
Yeah.
The Cummins, but what I like about the Cummins is behind it is the Allison transmission.
Sure.
But I'm not sure what the 600 horsepower Detroit. But Alan went to, he went to the rock crawling thing up in Utah.
Okay.
The reason why they took him is because he built all their Jeeps.
Okay.
So he says, okay, I'm their traveling mechanic. And he was in a caravan of about 5 motorhomes, all car guys. But the guy with the DD16, the 600 horsepower, he left them all on every hill.
I bet.
Alan said it was no smoke. He just passed you like a Corvette.
Sure.
And he said nobody could hang with him. And he had 2 Jeeps on a trailer where everybody else just had one.
Just had one, yeah. Yeah, I believe it.
So it was
horsepower is everything.
Okay, we got a caller. Who might that be?
That would be Tom.
Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
How can we help you?
I got a 2004 GMC Envoy, the 4.3-liter six-cylinder.
Okay.
Every morning I get up for like the last 2 weeks now, I start the thing up. The voltage meter on it is only showing about 7, and then the battery light comes on. If I shut it off and start it, sometimes it'll take 5 or 6 times. Then it goes back up to the 14 where it's charging and the battery light goes out.
So let me ask you a couple questions. Every time you go to start this, it cranks over normally.
Yep. It seems very fine as far as the battery. The good charge in that and good life.
Okay.
It starts right up, but...
Okay, well, the reason I asked you that was, is he said it's 7 volts, and it ain't going to crank over at 7 volts. It needs 9.6. So I'm asking you.
That's what it's showing on the gauge is about 7, but it starts up no problem.
That's
and
my
after
point.
After about 5 or 6 times of doing that, then it'll jump up to the, like, 14.
I heard that. I understand what you're saying. I was responding to what you said. 9.6, so I don't believe the 7 on the gauge. That's not possible. The red light indicates that we've lost continuity and we've lost contact with the alternator, but then you say you either rev it up or you restart it and the light goes away. I think I'd be wanting to look at the diode pattern on an oscilloscope. I think I'd want to be able to full field that alternator to see if we can get 55, 65 amps out of it. I'd want to see what the voltage is when you start it up and the light is on, because I need it to be somewhere around 13.5. So there's a lot, but the electrical systems check, let's use you as an example. What is this kind of, check the battery, the alternator, the regulator, check for grounds and all that stuff.
Check power and grounds for sure. Make sure the battery's clean, all terminals don't have any schmutz on them that will, you know, cause corrosion or what have you. Definitely the connection at the alternator, make sure that's clean and in good shape. Chevrolet usually controls their alternators with an ECM, so it could be a wiring problem, could be an ECM issue, but I would have to definitely full field the alternator and see what that does, and chances are we're looking at an alternator. But
I agree, because he revs it and it goes away.
Right.
And that just tells me that...
Something's not waking up on the alternator.
And another thing is I like hammers. Okay? I fix lots of cars with hammers. I fix Fords all day long with hammers. So here's the deal.
That's the second hour. But anyway. Yeah.
So here's what I'm saying. I'm going to let it sit overnight, and then I'm going to start it up, and the light's going to be on. I'm going to shut it right off.
Right.
Then I'm going to start it back up. Hopefully the light's back on. I'm going to start tapping on the alternator, and all of a sudden it goes away.
Right.
I'm done.
Right.
But that diagnostic is going to be like $128. You got to pay for my experience.
It's a big hammer. Yeah. It's a big hammer.
I'm not saying that you should have it. I think most shops are going to be somewhere between $25 and $50. And what I do is I take my price and I bracket it. I cover the industry.
Sure.
$25 to $50 to have them go through it and check it out. Another thing he could do, too, is he could have a ground problem because the motor's sitting in rubber mounts, and he could have a ground problem where it's not seeing that circuit, which would turn the light on.
Sure.
Not too long ago, we saw an old Chevy pickup. You're supposed to go off the negative cable to the core support that holds the radiator. You're supposed to go to the fender, and then you're supposed to go to the engine. You have to have all three of those because they're isolated from one another. None of them were there.
Wow.
All it had is to the fender.
Wow.
So the motor sits in rubber, folks, and so the motor's not likely to get a ground when you're grounding the fender or the core support, which is the piece of metal that holds the radiator. So you have to have hopscotch grounds through there.
Right.
So anyway. All right, $25 to $50, Tom. That's what I think. 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join us. 602-508-0960. Nate from Strictly Diesel. He's south of Pinnacle Peak Road on I-17. Nate started in the business on...
Well, 1990 after I graduated high school.
Okay.
Dating myself, but yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Did you work on diesels when you were in high school? So when did that smoke get you?
It never gotten me yet. It hooked me, if anything.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Could you see diesels being romping, stomping, spinning the tires clean off of them back in 1990?
Back in the day, no.
We didn't have anything like that.
No, definitely not. But it hooked me just for the sheer volume that there was out there and the need that was needed for a technician, you know.
What was that Chevrolet motor back then that was the diesel?
6.2.
6.2.
6.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't talk about that.
Was that a big piece of horse manure?
In certain fields, yes.
You're being nice.
I'm being nice, yes.
602-508-0960. Nate from Strictly Diesel, Mark Salem at your service, 602-508-0960. Gil's running the board, so you want to be nice to him. So when you call, he's the one that goes KKNT, and then you have to be nice. If you say bad words to Gil, or if you call into suspicion his manhood or anything like that, chances of you getting on the show are about zero. So be nice to Gil because he's a nice guy. And the reason this show is so successful is because of Gil. So 17 minutes after the hour, we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Nate is here from Strictly Diesel. He's up on... south of the Pinnacle Peak Road on I-17 on the east side of the road.
East side, yep.
East side of the road.
Yep, off 23rd
Ave. 23rd Avenue. And I've known Nate for many, many years. And as a matter of fact, long before we got into diesel, you were my go-to caller.
Yeah.
Because, as you well know, when you start something new, there's a learning curve.
Always. Always.
And you get involved in a specific kind of car like the diesels, and all of a sudden things cost a lot more, and so the risk and reward grows dramatically.
Exactly.
So if you miss an alternator, or you miss a fuel pump, or if you miss something, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then you'll have something that's really expensive in inventory.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you never get rid of those.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Okay, Tom, you're up. How can we help you?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I have a 06 Silverado Duramax, and I put a bigger tank on it. Is there any way the gas gauge can be programmed into that? Because it still thinks it's got a 25-gallon or 20 whatever it is in there.
To my knowledge, unfortunately not. Dodge and Chevrolet both don't offer that programming. Even in the aftermarket, I haven't seen it yet. The only ones that we can adjust when we're installing tanks are Fords.
Okay.
Yeah, so to my knowledge, the Chevrolet does not have that option. Maybe, and I say maybe because I've never researched it, but maybe Superchips, if you call them, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I've never seen an option for that on the Chevy.
What was the height difference between the aftermarket one you put in and the one they took out? Do you know what the height difference was?
No, it fit right in the stock tank. I mean, it just...
What brand did you install?
I think it was Titan, I think.
Titan, okay.
What was the other one? American? I think there was only two manufacturers at the time.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other manufacturer right now, and it slipped my mind. But he's in California. Titan, I believe, is out of Idaho or something like that. But, yeah, Titan's a decent brand. The only reason we asked or whatever is the other brand will send a different arm for the sender. I don't think Titan does that on theirs. But that helps with the accuracy anyway.
Okay. You got a pencil handy, Tony?
Yes, I do, actually.
Okay. You're going to ask for Allen, and you're going to have the specifics. How many gallons did the stock one have? How many gallons did the Titan have? If you have the receipt and it's got a model number or a tank number on it, have that in front of you. 480-598-1234. And don't call Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but ask for Allen and tell him your dad said that maybe you can help me. And that's kind of throwing the gauntlet down.
There you go.
And we install the heck out of Titan fuel tanks. So we know that if you don't get the filler neck in there right, they'll leak gasoline and diesel like a sieve. We've made all the mistakes that you can make.
So have we. So have we. Yeah.
Not too long ago, Alan put a tank in my Dodge. And I drove up north. I was going to Payson. And I filled up, and I got fuel all over everywhere.
Oh, boy.
And I said to him, what do we do? And I said, why don't you grab a pump and meet me up here? And he goes, no, you just drive it. It'll be okay. He said, Dad, diesel fuel's not flammable. And I said, that really makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I said, who made the mistake? And he goes, I don't know. We'll figure it out when you get back. And I says, I'm a customer. And he goes, you're my dad. And he hung up on me.
Oh, jeez.
And so evidently there's a grommet on the top of there. And we didn't get something seated.
Yep.
And it's okay. I just knew I could stay at half a tank and be fine.
Right.
But it made a mess of the rear tailgate and the rear bumper.
Oh, I'm sure.
It made a mess.
Yeah.
So anyway, Tony, good luck to you. Allen is his name, and I'm pretty sure he could help you. It's different when we have those comebacks. And you know and I know that we have them.
Oh, yeah.
It's what I think that's important to me is the attitude of the customer.
Right.
I'll bend over. I'm sure you will, too. I'll bend over backwards when it's clear we made a mistake. We'll rent a car. We'll do everything we need to. We'll wash and wax it, if in the case of my truck, with the diesel fuel all over the back. On the other hand, the worst-case scenario is we're blamed for it, but it ain't our fault. Because we weren't on that area of the car. We've already had our butt chewed. It's already been an ugly situation. We're forced to diagnose it because we can't say it's not our fault until we know what it is.
Right.
So you got to diagnose it for free.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are tough for us to deal with.
Right.
Through the grace of God, most of our customers, I'd say 95% of our customers, would never do that. But there's always a and sometimes they're having a bad day, I guess.
No, yeah, absolutely. We all have bad days.
And my wife would say that. Calm down. Maybe they're having a bad day. They aren't the only one in this building that's having a bad day.
Yeah, yeah.
But that happens a lot, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, none of us don't make mistakes.
Right.
Do you know how long a new Honda Ridgeline will, how many miles will a new Honda Ridgeline go with no oil in it?
40 miles.
17.
17.
17 miles.
Wow, okay.
We know for sure.
Yeah.
The guy used to work for us. He's a retired Tempe policeman. He drove our shuttle bus. He brings it in. Eddie, my 32 years with us.
Right.
He gets called off that car, which is something we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So he shuts the hood, hands the keys, drives. Ugh. You know, we tow it back. The motor's just smoked.
Yeah.
I mean, and what am I going to do? So you got no choice. It's a $17,000 motor.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So put a new motor in it. And my daughter, Andy, said, Eddie, is it possible that you didn't put oil in it? Eddie goes, Andy, I just don't know. So we have security cameras all over.
Sure.
So Andy looks at the one, and from the start to finish, she's got the truck in, and she walks downstairs, and she goes, I can clear it up for you, Eddie. And we have guns that hang off the ceiling.
Sure.
And so he should have grabbed a gun and poked. No, never did.
Never did.
Never did. He still has a job. I still love him like a son. And he's 4 years younger than my son.
Uh-huh.
So he's worked for me,
right,
4 years less than my son is old.
Right.
So, you know, you just forgive him, but
yeah,
that's the first time that's happened in a long time.
Oof.
I would have thought the oil light would have come on a little earlier.
I would have thought so, too, or a gauge or a warning. Or.
And I thought that there would be some clatter or something before we just
exactly
cooked the engine.
Yeah.
But I wasn't there. So it's one of those things.
Yeah.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we have five. Be nice to Gil, because Gil's one that answers the phone. And he has a bad habit of pushing the buy button. Yeah, he just does that.
The buy button?
Yeah. Usually it's my wife wanting to talk to me about something. That's not true. But anyway,
yeah,
Gil
yeah
and I have worked together since 2011. So I don't know that I have ever shook his hand, but we're like brothers.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean,
oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what he looks like when I'm here and he's there. You know? And I've never been down and done a show in their studio.
That's odd.
Never.
Yeah.
Either Tempe or Payson.
Wow.
And been. Now, last week, I got to tell you something. Last week, we had a problem. And I was really upset. And guess whose the problem was?
Yours.
Mine.
Yeah.
Mine. I have these little buttons on my piece of equipment, and they're really small. My fingers are really fat. And
yeah
when I push this one, I push program button, and I wiped out programming, and we'll be back right after
this.
Oh,
man.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Nate is sitting here next to me. He's from Strictly Diesel. He's on the I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road, 23rd Avenue. Hold on a minute. Let me just turn you on, and I'll push the right button this time for you. And I'm sorry about
hey,
that.
Hey, there I am. Yeah.
Well, see, we have four microphones. Since you're sitting next to me, you're number four.
Right.
Normally, you sit over there, and that's number two. And Mark just screwed up.
Yeah, not a big deal.
Yeah. Real quick, you know there's a parts problem already, big time.
Starting to see it and hear it.
And I'm going to take Bill's call, and then we're going to talk about that.
Sure.
But, Bill, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, Nate and Mark. I've got a 97 F250, 7.3 turbo diesel, and I changed out the glow plug relay because much below about 50, it doesn't start very well.
Okay.
And it seemed to help a little bit, around 40 degrees. It took a couple cycles, but it would start, but it's still not really starting very well in the cold.
Okay.
Is my next step to replace all the glow plugs?
Most likely. Do you have a ohm meter by chance?
No.
No?
Okay. Wait, let me just change that. Do you know how to use an ohm meter?
I was thinking that.
I was just going to say, if I did, I wouldn't know what to do with it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to interrupt you. AutoZone and those guys sell ohm meters.
Sure.
And an ohm meter is a continuity. If it touches the two leads together, it goes to zero. And there's a resistance value there. So I'm going to step in front of Nate and say, one end of the stinger goes on the glow plug and the other goes to ground.
Yes.
That's not that hard. Now, you describe what that means.
Yes. So if you get an ohm meter and if you want to test it this way, now granted, depending on the mileage, you may just want to replace the glow plugs. Okay.
Okay.
But the glow plugs should read under 2 ohms. And believe it or not, anywhere from 94 to 03, I'm seeing ohm readings of 50, 100 ohms, you know, 300 ohms, whatever the case may be, because that glow plug has fallen out of spec, if you will. On your particular genre of truck, which is the same as mine, they're known to burn the connection there at the valve cover. You've got 4 connections, 2 on each side. So if you pull the plug off of that valve cover and look at the 2 outer pins, you want to make sure that you don't see any, like, burn marks.
And melting.
Or melting, or like, the pin coming out of the valve cover isn't surrounded by plastic or whatever they make the valve cover out of. But double-check that first, because if you see that, you will need glow plugs for sure, but you're also going to need the valve cover gaskets and the harnesses under the valve cover. And most likely an engine connector, which not a lot of people have, but we do, hint. subtle hint. But
how
anyway.
How many leads are on that engine?
Well, there's five per connector, so.
Okay, yeah. So 10. So it's something that, no, we're not going to stock, but it's also something that doesn't have 30 wires in it, and you have to match colors and stuff.
Correct.
That's what I was kind of driving at.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some things to look at. Definitely easily fixable. Knowing the symptoms you have, yeah, you most likely need glow plugs.
Okay.
I have seen IPR and injector issues.
You got to talk about IPR.
Related to that also, but you got to start with glow plugs. Got to start with the basics.
What does IPR mean?
Injection control pressure regulator.
Okay.
2 minutes.
One other comment on that also for your truck. How does it crank over? Is it good cranking speed?
Yeah.
Okay. I say that with caution or just as an advisement, but I see a lot of these trucks, they don't crank over fast enough between battery cables, batteries, and the starter that's as old as the truck is. You know, it comes time when those items need to be looked at too. So I'll take your word for it, as long as you're cranking fast enough. But most likely you're going to need glow plugs for sure. So,
and it could be upstream from that. Now, now if you get your own meter, it's going to come in different scales.
Yeah.
And so it in simplistic matter, it could go 0 to 10, it could go 10 to 1,000, it could go to 1,000 to 10,000. He said 2 ohms.
Yeah.
And so it's the ohm meter, the digital volt ohm meter has volts. It probably has AC and DC. AC is your house and DC is your truck. It has an ohm meter.
Okay.
And it
1 minute.
It could have other basic readings. It's the most important thing I have.
Right.
With this kind of testing. Mine's about 200, but mine's got an inductive amp probe. It was something that we need for alternators. Boom, boom. You're taking the... And the same way with the glow plug, couldn't you use an inductive amp probe?
You could also do that, yeah.
Okay.
See what amp draw you have through that connector.
And it's just a circle.
Yeah.
And you go around the lead wire, and you circle it, and then you crank, and you can compare to all the cylinders on there, and
right.
you can quickly determine which one's drawing more amps than others, or which one's not drawing any because it's open. Am I right?
Yep. I have another comment, too, on this particular body style. We'll probably say it after the break, but...
Okay. Go ahead.
Go. We got time?
Yeah.
On your truck...
On the 40 break and on the 20 break...
Yeah.
We'll get time.
Gil can say bad words, and I don't care. But on the 30 and the top of the hour, I got to hit it.
Yeah. Yeah. The body style you're in, the voltmeter is pretty accurate. So if you turn the key on and you don't see it sway to the left towards 8... You know those glow plugs aren't necessarily working.
I looked at that, and it doesn't really move much.
Okay, so that tells you right there, either the relay's not working or you have bad glow plugs, and it's trying to give it voltage, but it just can't give it because the glow plugs can't accept it, if that makes sense. The resistance is too high.
Okay, yeah. Yep,
so,
sure does. One last quick question.
Sure.
I've got 2 cans of diesel fuel in my garage from years ago when I had a tractor. They're probably 4 or 5 years old. Is it even worth trying to use that, or should I just... get rid of it?
Hold on. The real question is if I don't use it, what do I do with it? That's the real question.
Yeah. Well, that's the other question, yeah.
I think AutoZone or O'Reilly's will take that as waste.
I do, but, I mean, let me ask you. So 2 gallons, he fills it up, puts 2 gallons in the tank.
I think he'd be fine as long as you're using an additive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So use it in small amounts per tank at each time, you should be fine.
Yeah, just burn it up. I think he has a better than even chance of never knowing that that's old diesel fuel. And there's a lot of the older guys that say, hey, I had it my farm in Minnesota for, you know, 6 months to a year, and I used it in my tractors. So
maybe if it's been sitting for that long, don't use the bottom inch of it, just in case there's moisture or what have you in that tank or in that gas can.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah, as long as you use it in small amounts, you should be fine.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill. 602-508-0960. We've got open lines available. We have 5, and we've only done 3 calls this hour. It must be because of your BO is the only thing I can think of.
I took a shower.
I know you did. 602-508-0960. But before we go, let's talk about Blackwell Auto at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom's been a friend of mine for a very long time. He does old hot rods as well as newer model cars, and he does a really good job. I sent him a Jaguar not too long ago, and I haven't heard, but I know he can fix it. It's got a clunk. After many, many people have guessed, it's still got the clunk. That's like waving the red flag in front of a bull. So I said to them, make sure you tell Blackwell, nobody can fix this. Nobody in the world can fix this. And Salem said you wouldn't have a prayer in hell of fixing it. And then he'll put on his horns and he'll fix your car for you.
Yep,
so anyway, Blackwell's a good guy. He's the only one in Northeast Scottsdale that I can tell you will do a good job. And I promise we'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem, Nate. From Strictly Diesel, Nate Brecken.
Brecken.
All right, I'll get it right someday. I'll remember. No one's going to know that anyway. No, they're going to ask for Nate. Or they can go to Strictly Diesel and ask for the tallest guy there.
The tallest guy there,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. The guy that signs the front of the paycheck, not the back of the paycheck.
Right.
That's a good decision.
That's a good decision,
yeah.
too. Yeah.
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 All right.
Dennis and I trade off on that, but yeah.
Yeah, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You're welcome to grab one, 602-508-0960. There's only one shop in Mesa that has been able to pass the filter created by Mark Salem. Oh, there's lots of shops in Mesa that can repair your car, and I'm not going to pass judgment on them, but we have certain levels of criteria. Insurance coverage, deductibles, Better Business Bureau records, all your public records and reviews on the internet, the social media activity, all that stuff. Because we need guys that are not going to create problems for Mark. So the only place in Mesa is Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma own and run Thompson's Auto Repair. I've known their parents since 1968. So back in 1968, I was in high school. In 1968, the people that dominated the gas station business in the Tri-City area were the Thompsons and the Vivians, and I worked for Ken Vivian. So they were the families that set the standard. Now, Brian wasn't even born at that time, but he comes from that line of family. So wow. I know he's good. So if you're in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair at Main Street, just east of Stapley, and who might be on the air?
That would be Jake.
Jake, good morning.
Morning.
How can we help you?
Yeah, I got a 2015 Jeep Patriot, and a while back my compressor went out because I didn't know what I was doing, and I poured one of those cans into those cans you see at Walmart to make your air conditioner cooler, and it sucked the whole can in and blew my compressor.
Okay.
But around where my cabin filter is, it makes a clicking noise every time I turn on the fan or the AC. It goes click, 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 click for a couple seconds. I'm not sure if it's just cabin filter needs to be replaced or if there's something.
No, I think the blend door has lost its parameters.
Sounds like a blend door or a relay or something in it. But, yeah, I would guess blend door.
You need to do a better job, and here's how I would suggest you do it. There's maximum and normal on your air conditioning. All right? You start it up, you flip it on, it's clicking. Does it change between manual and automatic? Number two, does it change on fan speed? You need to tell us what makes it click faster or the click go away. If you do that, you'll save yourself $100+ in diagnostic time. Plus, you're going to teach us how to make it happen. The blend door is the door that gives you recirculated air or outside air. So in technical words, how do you like this, Nate? Swamp cooler versus air conditioner.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the swamp cooler uses outside air, cools it, shoves it into the house. That's outside. And the recirculatory is like your air conditioning at your house. So I can't tell you what it is, but I agree with Nate. Got a relay that's clicking for some reason, or the blend door is opening and closing, and we have to tell the blend door where open is and where closed is, and until we tell it its parameters, then it's going to do what you're talking about. Has anybody had the battery disconnected lately? Has anybody jump started it lately? Any of that?
Yeah, no, nothing like that. It's just when I start the car and I turn on the fan, it just starts clicking, and okay. It only clicks for about a couple seconds, but it goes click, 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 and then it stops.
Okay, well, then I need to know if it's on fan speed 1, 2, 3, or 4. I need you to play with
it
that.
It doesn't matter what speed.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't change in speed. But I do have another question.
Okay.
I've been looking around. I put a trailer hitch on my car. I got one for the model of my car. And for the wiring, I've noticed that I can't find a quick connect. Everything wants to run to my batteries that I can find, and I was hoping I didn't have to get one that ran to my battery, that I could just attach it to both the brake lights and then run the wire out like a quick connect type of thing instead of having to run a wire all the way under the car to the battery. And someone told me that maybe it's because my car doesn't have enough power.
Let's go to Google and fix our cars, okay? Huh. Yeah, that's a great idea. That's that kind of stuff. You have to ignore that. Somebody sitting there that is a doctor in front of you, or he works at a grocery store. I'm not belittling those people, but that's like me telling somebody how to bake a cake. Now you got my heart racing, and now you got me making a fool of myself. Look it, I'm going to give you the best advice that I can give you. Go to U-Haul. That's it. Go to U-Haul.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. Go to U-Haul. They'll fix it for you. There's probably, if that car was made to tow anything, there's going to be some wiring in the back, and it could be a pigtail. So they know how to do it. There's a good chance you already have 12 volts back there. But that plug is going to have 7 different connections. Help me, Nate. Parking, left turn, right turn, ground, power,
sometimes
and
reverse.
There you go. There you go. So it
and brake.
I got left brake and right brake. And the turn signals are actually that same circuit, so I shouldn't have counted those. But that's what...
I actually went to U-Haul. That's where I'm going to actually buy my connector from, because they do sell one there.
Just have them do it.
Keep the cost down.
Yeah, there you go. Just have them do it.
It's not that difficult. They have a how-to-do video on the YouTube, and that's how I did my trailer hitch, receiver hitch.
All righty. Well, good luck to you. And that's a good way to do it, is find somebody to give you a hand. I mean, if you can get somebody to describe what needs to be done, then and they don't they're not giving you car advice because they fit clothes at JCPenney's that's not there anymore. But that's okay. That's why I'm using them. So those are the kinds of things that you have.
Sure.
The problem with getting somebody to tell you what they think is that's like, again, me telling you how to bake a wedding cake. I've never baked a wedding cake. As a matter of fact, the only thing I can do is open a can, look at how many minutes it needs to be microwaved. That's the extent of my cooking capabilities. I can make toast. And you know how I like my toast, Nate?
Burnt.
Between brown and black.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I... Okay, we got another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Ivan.
Ivan, good morning.
Good morning. I have an 06 F350 6.0 that you guys, 6 months ago, worked on. And had Alan was the advisor, and he did a great job, man. I'm very, very happy with the work he did. Radiator and a bunch of new code for the chip, the aftermarket chip, and did a great job. One other thing I brought it in for was transmission was not going into drive or reverse right away. It was stalling a bit, and then it kind of clunked into gear. Once it's in gear, it just goes great. Now, Alan said that it needed a software update, and he did that, and it made it better. But it's still happening, and there's no real consistency with when it happens, whether I start it up right away in the morning. Typically in the morning when it's cold, it will go into gear better. But sometimes it just goes into gear, drive or reverse, just fine. Sometimes it's really bad. But
okay.
Again, no consistency. I'm trying to figure out. It only has 100,000 miles on the transmission.
Okay.
It was replaced.
It's real simple. Is we need to know if the transmission is warm or cold. That's an important part of this whole thing. So
I
mean,
pay attention to that.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem to be consistent warm or cold. The consistency seems to be happening all the time. But when it's cold, it does go into gear a little bit better.
Okay.
With less frequency.
All right, well, 100,000 miles for a truck that's what, an 06, so it's 14 years old. It's not like you drove the wheels off of it. You know, I don't know what's the matter with it. I mean, I don't know. I would have thought we'd have a temperature part of this equation. When it's cold, it does this, and when it's hot, it does that. Typically, when we're slipping, it's got hard internal seals, and that's usually because of low use, and you fit into that category. I can tell you what I would do that isn't going to cause any harm. I'd put a pint of brake fluid in it, .4, .3, or .4. And brake fluid causes rubber to swell, then the question then becomes, is it any better? It's not going to be worse. It's going to be any better. And you say, and they say, okay, well, we'll take it apart and replace all the internal seals.
You could put brake fluid in it?
That's what I said, yeah.
Oh, never heard that before, but okay.
Okay.
I would just caution on the brake fluid personally. Mark knows, though, and it is true. It works. But
he doesn't want to agree with me because he doesn't want to take the risk. That's the whole issue.
It's not that I'm not agreeing. It's just I have another thought. But
okay, go.
There is a solenoid in that pan, and forgive me, I'm not thinking of the correct name of it currently, but that solenoid controls the pressures of the trans, and depending on if it's hot or cold, warm, you know, indifferent, what have you, it may cause a delay in how it directs that fluid pressure to make it go into reverse and or drive.
Substandard fuel fluid pressure as
correct,
well. So
correct.
The delay can be because it switches slow, but I agree with you.
Correct.
And the other part is...
And it may not set a code. It may not give you any information other than the fact that it just reacts slowly when it's acting up for you going into reverse or drive. There is also a position sensor for where the what gear that transmission is in. That is internal to the pan on those. So that sensor there could also be at fault, even though, again, it should throw you a light, should throw you a code. But, I would say bring it back to him, let Alan test it. And
are both of those accessible at the pan?
With the pan off, yes.
Oh, right. That's what I mean. Both of them are accessible.
Yes.
So are we going to be ohming out from harness to harness? Or are we going to just look for 12 volts here in the ground there?
Mm.
Or can you remember? Because that's...
You're dealing more with ohm readings and checking the harness. Actually, the harness could be at fault, too, here, because it is involved on those. But from the outside of the trans to the inside of the you're looking at resistance readings to that particular solenoid and then verifying whether or not,
it's operating and opening and closing.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Last but not least, he's got 100K on it. Would you pull the pan and do the filter because we're going to be in there, or would you flush?
Yes.
Both?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you. If we haven't had anything done on 100,000 miles, I want to do the pan first, and then I want to flush it, start all over again.
Depending on the circles you're in, the 5R is a horrible transmission, or it's a great transmission. And I'm of the line that it's a great trans.
Just throw us under the bus.
Yeah, I like the trans. The 5R is great, I think. So,
are you in the minority?
I'm probably in the minority, but
and what percentage are you in? Are you in the 10% or the 50%?
I'd say 50, but...
Oh, I wouldn't. I didn't want to say anything. but there are... And it has a lot to do, and I'm going to agree with you, there's a lot to do with the driver and his right foot.
There's that, too.
It has a lot to do then.
Absolutely.
How much abuse has it had? You got a 16-year-old kid that can take that transmission to its knees in 50,000 miles.
Right.
Then you got a guy who never pulls anything and that has an egg taped on his throttle pedal, and he's never broke the egg, that it'll last forever.
Yep.
So those are the kinds of things that you do. But, Alan would be a good guy. And we also have a transmission guy that we can depend on real well.
There you go.
And so he fixed a Ford the other day. I mean to tell you, I would have never found this in a million years. He walks over to it. He grabs the harness across the top of the bell housing. He says, okay, put it in gear. And he pulls the harness, and it goes out of gear. He pushes the harness, and he goes into gear, and he goes, okay.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, are you going to take care of this? And he goes, I know exactly where to go. I said, okay, fine. He takes it, comes back. The harness now has a piece of heater hose over the top. There's some ties, and we drive it, and we can't get it to happen.
Right. Yeah.
And he says, I can replace the harness. That's cost a lot of money. He says, but this has just got a bare wire that's rubbing on the bell housing.
Yeah.
So he says, I'm going to fix the wire and put another layer of insulation on it.
We had a Dodge with a similar situation. Yep.
And those are hard to find.
Oh, yeah.
And experience means everything when it comes to that.
That's a great market.
All righty. We'll be back in a minute. It's 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, top of the hour. We've got another 60 minutes of fun and frivolity. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto Repair is one of the shops in my best car repair shops list that you can find on marksalem.com, marksalem.com. They've been around since 1967. And when you got Bob and you've got, I mess this up every time. He's got a young buck there that works for him that he clearly knows 10 times more than I do. He is just one of those young guys that has the skill levels. But anyway, 38th Avenue and Indian School, great company, been around a long time. Ellen, the wife, handles the front counter and the work orders. Bob runs the shop. I think his name is Jeremy. It starts with a J. I'm not going to kind of mess it up. But this kid has fixed cars that other people have surrendered on. So anyway, if you've got a problem, like when you open the door, the glove box barks at you, take it over to Larry Harker's Auto. He can probably fix it. Okay. I said I got a good transmission guy.
Yeah. Okay.
They have my cell phone. So we have a 06 F-350 6-liter. And he sends me a text, and what does it say?
Yeah, it says Warren MLPS, Warren manual valve, shift solenoid D.
Okay, so yeah. Describe that.
MLPS is the manual lever position sensor. That's what tells where the trans is.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Warren manual valve that directs fluid, depending on what gear you're in, to certain parts of the valve body. And then shift solenoid D is the one I was thinking about that modifies the pressure accordingly. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So he's given us three choices. I'm saying at 100,000, we just do them all.
Well, there's that too.
You could do them one at a time. I'm not quite sure that's a great idea, but you can do them one at a time.
There's also a temperature sensor in that valve body that fails, but he wasn't complaining about that particular concern. So,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Yeah, there'd be another thing to replace too, just for the heck of it.
If you're going to go in there.
Cheap sensor.
Yeah, you might as well do everything, because otherwise it's going to cost you a pan gasket and 3, 4, 5 quarts of oil every time we go in there.
Yeah.
So you just kind of do it. So anyway, it's great to have those tranny guys backing you up. You know what I mean? Because are you really good with gas, fuel injection, 8-speed transmissions, and 6-speed?
I'm going to call somebody. Yeah.
And same way with us.
Exactly.
We can't be good in everything.
No.
We just can't.
There's so much.
So you surround yourself with paint and body guys. You surround yourself with insurance kind of adjuster kind of guys. Is this worth fixing? And if so, what's the proper? And
right.
Then you got tranny guys for us,
yep.
Paint and body guys for us.
Yep.
We're pretty good with tires. We're pretty good. I'm real good with oils and stuff like that. But there are things we need to lean on other people.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
Alger is one of them. He's too far away from us because he's up at I-17. And he's close to you.
He's close to me.
He's right around the corner from you.
Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about Alger. Alger was a skinny kid, and he worked for me from probably 75 to 79. And he came in, and he had a big Adam's apple, and he was about the size of a popsicle stick. And he says, you know, I'd like to apply for a job, and I just kind of liked him. And he morphed into this guy that was just unbelievable.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
One day he says, he has a Nova, and one day he says to me, and we worked Monday through Saturday. He says, can I work on my car on Sunday? I said, what are you going to do? And he goes, I'm going to take out the manual or the automatic and put a manual in. I said, okay, let's go over the need of parts. Cross member? Check. Tranny? Check. Drive shaft? Check. Who's going to cut the hole in the tunnel? I am. I got a template. Ooh, okay. Clutch pedal assembly? Got all that. Oh, I'm going to tell you something, Alger. If I come, I only have 2 bays at this gas station. If I come to work Monday morning and your car's in pieces and it's on one of those racks, I'm going to push it out into the street. He says, okay, this is a true story.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, he's laying rubber in front of my house. I swear to God, that's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. And I'm outside going, it's 1 o'clock. When did you start? He said, last night.
Yeah.
He says, I got it. So I'm looking at it. He's got the boot. It's perfect. The hole is just perfect because I can peel back the boot.
Sure.
I drive it. The clutch is perfectly adjusted, about an inch on the top and an inch on the bottom. I mean to tell you, now he owns a transmission shop.
Nice.
And he has been my go-to guy for 100 years.
Right.
So Alger Stowers. Now, here's the key. It's ANS Transmissions. You know what it stands for?
No.
Alger Stowers or Alger and Shelley. That's his wife's name. Or Automatics and Standards.
Oh, there you go.
But he won't tell anybody, which it means.
Yeah.
He won't say
yeah.
What does ANS stand for. So when he's around his wife, it's Alger and Shelley. but if it's you need to talk manuals, then it's manuals. It's automatic and standards.
Sure.
So the problem with Alger is he's so busy. it takes a while to get in there.
Right.
But he dominates in the old transmissions. The old Buicks and the old GMs and the old Fords, he just knows those backwards. But he knows the new automatic. And he says, the old ones we shift with fuel pressure and throttle. We had a TV cable.
TV cable.
And the new ones we shift with solenoids. We open this one and close those two. We open these three and we close this one. And we have all these solenoids giving us 5-6 speeds.
Right.
And he says, and we're looking at your throttle, but we're looking at your throttle. We're looking at the speed. We're looking at the RPM of the engine. We're looking at the grade. We're looking at all this stuff, and then we make a decision. I said, well, we had one the other day that had no fourth gear, 1, 2, 3, 5. Oh, and he goes, well, that's the scoculator valve in wire 3 of connection 9.
Yeah.
I said, you better come down here.
Right.
Send me a picture of that.
Exactly.
All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's another guy up near you. He doesn't compete with you, but it's Kurtz Auto at I-17 and Bell. He has been my hero a lot. He covers that north area really well.
He's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
Yeah.
And you know what else he does? He does weed eaters and lawnmowers.
Does he really?
So if you can't get your lawnmower, your weed eater started, you just drop it by a Kurtz.
Interesting.
He loves when I say that. He said one day, I came to work, there's two lawnmowers here.
Oh.
He said the only thing they didn't do is use the night drop.
Yeah.
Anyway, I sent him a lady. A lady had called me out of the blue. I had never done business with her before. And she says, I got three estimates for an engine. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about it. Why do you need an engine? I have an oil light on. Okay, when you start it, does it clatter? No, it's normal. Well, does it ever clatter? What does clatter mean? Well, like somebody doing a drum roll. Does it ever make noise? Does the engine noise ever change? Back and forth, back and forth. And I said, okay, I don't see anything for a motor except a red light, and the oil pressure switch could be grounded, which turns on the light. I don't know the answer to that. But somebody needs to take the oil pressure switch out, put a gauge in, go drive it, see if... So she says, okay, well, where do you... And I said, no, you. I already know you're up on I-17. Go see Kurtz. I said, so I think it was $27.50. You know?
Yeah.
And she had three estimates
right.
for engines.
Yeah.
And that's from that point on, he was like my hero up there on the I-17 corridor because yeah. everybody I sent there, because we can't handle the world. So that's why I have the Betts car repair shop, which you're on. It's just we have to, it's better for me to send you someplace close.
Right.
Somebody I already know, I have their cell phone number, they have mine. I have pictures of them when they were drunk sometime. We went hunting, stuff like that. Of course, you know I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But good chops. But he's done a really good job when it comes to that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Tell you somebody else that we were talking trannies. Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington.
There you go.
He knew Barney Rubble and Fred Flintstone. He did. Remember when they had cars with stone wheels?
That's saying something.
He was there.
Yeah.
He was. He's been around. What's the earliest transmission you can name?
C6, C4.
Oh, God, what about the Power Glide and the
Power
Torque
Glide?
Flight?
I didn't have to deal with those. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, you go way back to the late 50s, early 60s. I don't even know what the transmissions were called back then.
Right.
But those were, he knows those. He knows those all the way up to the new ones now.
Wow.
So he's been around. I'm going to tell you a story about him. He had a guy that had a noise when he was pulling his trailer. So they had tried to find the noise and couldn't. So Phil said, you know, why don't you hook up your trailer and come over here? This is the story from Phil. And he didn't even smile when he said it, so I knew he wasn't pulling on my leg. He said, so the guy pulls up. He's got a boat. It's a van, by the way. So he takes off, and he gets on the 143. He heads south, and he ends up on the 60, and they're eastbound. And then from there, they jump Country Club up all the way to University, and they're heading east. And it hasn't made the noise yet. They get to Lake Pleasant.
What?
Yeah. Phil says, I feel like I've been kidnapped.
Yeah.
He says, I thought we were going to go around the block. I thought we were going to go, you know, McDowell to Jefferson. I thought we'd... He says, we're at
2 minutes.
Lake Pleasant.
Wow.
He says, I'm checking to see if my phone works in case this guy wants to kidnap me or hostage or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
He says, I said to him, you got to take me home. I never, this is way outside. And he says, and it hasn't happened. And you said you could make it happen. He said the ride home was kind of quiet. But he says, from that point on, I learned a really important lesson. Where are we going?
Exactly.
And can you make it happen today?
Right.
So,
yeah.
But Phil's really good. 40th Street in Washington. been around a long time, and you can't hardly go wrong with automatic transmission exchange. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. That's an important consideration. They have to be able to let you hear the noise or to explain how you make it happen.
Right.
That's kind of an important thing. Otherwise,
1 minute.
What can we do?
More information, the better. And, yeah. And frankly, it falls on us to ask the right questions, too, so we get the information we need. So
that's a great point.
Always.
Yeah. It's our job to reach down in your throat and yank out the right answers by asking the right questions.
Yep.
And so that, but then there has to be, we have to have this conversation. Nate, there's three answers to the questions I'm going to ask you. Yes, no, and I don't know.
Right.
Okay. Don't guess on me.
Yeah.
If I get to that, I don't know, say, I don't know. Hot, cold, fast, slow, what gear, AC on, off, brake application for a clunk.
Sure.
Cold, hot, all that stuff.
Yep.
Morning, night, all that stuff.
Yep.
If I were to say to you, Nate, how much money could someone spend, or how much would they save in the diagnostic process if they can just give you something enough to when you walk away from the front counter, you kind of know what it is?
Thousands.
Absolutely.
Yeah, hundreds to thousands,
yes,
easily.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And the hard part is when you get the driver that it's dad who's bringing mom's car in, or mom that's bringing dad cars in. It's that kind of a transition.
Yep.
where we always lose that information line.
Yep, absolutely.
All righty, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. If you'd like to call and talk to Nate and Mark, you can. Nate's a diesel expert. Mark really knows a whole lot about nothing. So that's 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. So, it's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel. I'm Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to 12 talking about cars, having fun, and getting into a little bit of trouble. How's that?
Absolutely.
Okay. We have the next caller, okay?
Yeah.
I want you to guess where he's calling from. Here's your choices. Phoenix, Arizona, the United States, or Mexico or Canada.
I'm going to say Canada.
Okay. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it Bert Lauren? It's Lauren?
Hey.
Hey, Lauren.
How are you doing, Mark?
Good.
Lauren from Pentex in British Columbia.
See, how's that?
Yeah.
But
you probably don't know where that is.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You missed it because British Columbia is not in Canada. Columbia is in South America.
Oh.
You got the wrong Columbia.
I'm teasing you. Hey. Thank you for calling. How can we help you?
I have a 2019 Ford Edge ST.
Okay.
First six months of owning it, the transmission, I had it to the dealer here in Canada a couple of times from British Columbia, hammered shifts so hard that I thought the bottom of the transmission had gone on the bottom of the car.
Okay.
Took it to the dealer. They put it on the computers. Everything was fine. No technical service bulletins, anything. So we happen to have a house in Gilbert, Arizona as well. We can't come down, obviously, this year.
Yeah.
But we took it into Santan Ford last year. They were absolutely excellent. I had to take it in twice, but the second time, after they diagnosed and buggered around with it, they end up replacing the transmission. It's an 8-speed automatic. It's been absolutely perfect ever since, until a month ago. Ironically, it's happened twice now. It only happens when there's snow on the ground. It's an all-wheel drive. I took it 50 feet from my driveway to my neighbor's to unload some stuff we had shopped for the day before in about 3 inches of snow, backed it into his yard, put it in park, unloaded it, turned the engine off, started it, put it in drive to drive it back 50 feet to my driveway. Car wouldn't move. It was almost like it was frozen to the ground. Just really weird. Pushed on the throttle, gently, didn't want to hammer it. Finally, it went ahead. Pulled it 50 feet to my driveway, put it in reverse. It wouldn't go in reverse. I ended up parking out in front of the street, going to phone a tow truck, phone the Ford dealer here. They were going to call me back. 15 minutes later, I went out, started it, put it in drive. It perfect. No issue with it at all. It's never done it again until last week. We had another little bit of a snowfall. Exactly the same thing, only this time it wouldn't go in reverse. Put in reverse, the light flashed on the little dial, and the engine revved up and down, put in drive, would go forward, wouldn't go backward. Drove it about a block around our area. It was perfect. It's booked into the Ford dealership for Monday, and I doubt they're going to find it because the dealers here just don't seem to have the technology and stuff that your folks down south are having.
No. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you.
Okay.
Nate, let's talk this over. First of all, they replaced the transmission. If they had a pattern failure, it could possibly be that it's still the transmission.
Absolutely.
And it was nice of them to change the transmission because that's not something the dealers will typically do.
Correct.
And they don't. And their excuse is they don't have permission from the gods. But the matter is that somebody changed that transmission. That certainly would have been on a 2019. That's something that a lot of people would have done. So now we have the same problem again. So I suggest.
Well, no, this problem is different. They changed the transmission originally because when it shifted, it was hammering shifts real hard. Like,
okay, but you still have a transmission shifting problem. You still have a transmission shifting problem.
Well, this time it won't go into gear.
I know, but you can. No, wait a minute, Lauren. Lauren, you can complicate this as much as you can. All you're doing is you right now it's like a spider, like five fingers out, but there's five fingers north and five fingers south. So now you've put 10 things on the table. So where are we going to start? You know, if you give a description that has different issues, different reactions, and different stuff like that, I mean, it's confusing. So you have to kind of figure out what the short version is. And I thought that you were talking about sometimes it has no reverse, sometimes it does have reverse, sometimes it acts fine, sometimes it jerks into gear. Those are the kind of high points of all of it. But my point is this. They did fix it for some period of time, which would lead me to believe that we've got connection problems somewhere. We've got a harness problem somewhere. We're losing the signal. Nate, you and I both know the computer's not going to pick that up.
Right.
It's not going to be something that's going to set a check engine light. The command is gone, or the ground is gone, or the power supply to a solenoid is gone.
Yeah. He did say it was after it snowed twice that it would act up like this. So that's
cold.
In itself, cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we can't. That's the hard part. You can answer why it does it cold and not hot after you fix it.
Right.
But right now, no one knows what it is.
Do we have a power and ground issue? Is there rust somewhere where a ground is that could be causing it not to see the trans correctly? Is there a speed sensor issue, engine and or vehicle speed?
If we had it, you just named one thing. I'm going to give that to you. Run two or three grounds. Go from the battery to the transmission, go from the battery to the crossmember, go everywhere you need to go with the ground.
Yeah.
Or maybe use some jumper cables and just start hooking them up and letting them drive it and see what happens.
And as silly as it sounds, is the battery in good shape?
Yeah, absolutely. You got that.
These vehicles are so reliant on a good, clean 12-volt signal anymore, you know.
What about shift selector?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So if it thinks it's in park, it ain't going into gear.
Right.
And no matter how you play with the shifter, it ain't going into gear.
Yeah.
And so we've got all these dynamics going on. When he said edge, the first thing I was going to say is my wife has an edge. She hit her head just before she bought it. She hasn't been the same since then. It might be the only Ford in my entire family for like 200 years. But she loves the car, and she won't trade it. As much as I say, you know, the new Tahoe looks really nice.
Yeah.
She has made it very clear that I am not going to pick her
next vehicle.
Nice.
And she has 120,000 miles on this edge, and frankly, we've not done anything to it.
Yeah.
But it's a 2019. I think the dealer, would it be right that the dealer's already gone to all the hotlines?
You would think so. You'd hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've already punched in the VIN, found out what transmission it has, and starts punching in that transmission with different problems and stuff like that. this is one that we would be afraid of. We, my shop, we'd be afraid of this because nobody's been able to come close. No one's changed many of the symptoms.
Right.
And so this is something that might very well be, you have to wait till it gets really worse and easier to find. And that's going to be when it won't go into any gear, no matter what you do.
Right.
But couldn't you drive this home and back with a scanner in it and watch the throttle control, watch the TPS, watch the shift selector,
sure,
watch transmission pressure?
Sure.
But it has to happen when you're doing that.
When we're doing it, yeah.
One minute.
So many times I'll unplug my diagnostic tool and just drive the truck because it's almost like the truck knows the doctor's here and I'm not going to act up. So I will ignore data and just drive the truck, and so many times it acts up, or I get the feeling of what's happening, and then I can further diagnose it from there.
By going to the scanner. But the scanner talks in numbers.
Right.
It's not something that the normal person's going to be able to pick up on.
Right.
So if you got 5 volts to the shift selector, then it's either 5 or 0. Or it might be 3 for reverse, and it might be 4 for drive.
Right.
But you have to understand all those numbers in order to determine whether something's wrong.
Yeah.
So, Lauren, the best I can offer you is you have no choice but to continue. And you might pick a different dealer, and may I suggest that Sanderson, on the way northwest corner of the valley, is the one that has bailed Mark Salem out numerous times. We had a diesel, and they fixed it when we couldn't. And nobody else knew how to fix it, but they did it. So this isn't a diesel, I understand, but Sanderson's got...
I think he's still in Canada, so yeah, maybe if he has the ability, another dealer in Canada.
Okay, time for a break, Mark.
Yeah. All righty, we'll be back right after this. Everybody, I don't know if I was on the air or not. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to go catch up to you real quick. Nick, Bernard, and Tony, stay right there. But Nick, you're first.
Okay, thanks, Mark. I have an octane choice question, but I have to tell you what I did first, I think. And I had an exhaust system put on my truck, really nice. Goes out both sides of my 2014 GMC pickup. It's got a 5.3 motor. And I took it down and had it tuned up and diagnosed. And, one of my questions was with the guy there at the speed shop was, what kind of gasoline do you think I'd use? And he says, well, if you get the 91 octane, it goes farther. It's got more power. And I kind of tuned it up to give you a little more torque and horsepower. And if you use the 87, it's cheaper, but I don't believe you go as far, and it might be better to use the 91. So I hope I'm helping a lot of people because there's a lot of choices in gasoline out there.
Okay.
What do you think, Mark?
Well, I know. In an exaggerated way, on a 1 to 10 scale, the flash point and the drive and the explosion of regular is a 4. And on the high octane, it's a 5. So the explosion, with regular, it's pop. With super unleaded, it's pop. You see what I'm saying? We're talking milliseconds of time. Here's how it goes. Regular, one molecule ignites 10. 10 night do 100. 100 do 1,000. Okay, that's not regular. That's super, where we have one molecule igniting a little bit more, so the flash and the burn is longer. With regular, one ignites a million in an exaggerated way. I can tell you that this thing has come up in my life so many times, and here's what I say to people. Just do a blind test. Have your wife fill it up and not tell you what it is. Or put a half a tank in, whatever. Try Chevron, try Mobil, but as far as Mark Salem is concerned, I use the cheapest gas I can find. I don't care if it's, even though I have a Chevron hat on right now, I sell Chevron oil, but I don't care what kind of gas it is. What about you, Nate?
I go to Circle K or Mobil usually, but yeah, I overall don't have an issue. So.
Yeah, I think sometimes, first of all, you said, I feel better. It's got a little bit more power. Well, he hot rodded the thing up. He added some timing to it. He added a little bit of fuel to it. There's lots of things that we can do to jack up the timing. But that doesn't say that you have to put super in it.
And for that matter, there's additives out there that can enhance your gasoline So you put normal in it, but it enhances it to X,
yeah.
Which may be like super, but yeah.
It's an octane enhancer.
You pay for the additive, you pay for the super and let it the way it is, which is more. Yeah.
So. I've really owned, right now, I just sold a Jaguar. I had a blower on it. My wife couldn't tell the difference between the cheapest gas I could find and the super. I have a Camaro with a blower, and Alan says he can, but when we do the blind taste test, he can't.
Yeah.
And this is a 6 liter SS that has a supercharger on it.
Wow!
And it's romping and stomping now. And to true to closure, we have a twin turbo Corvette. It's an 06 Z06, and baby, you can feel the difference between regular and super.
Yeah.
So to answer your question in a real blunt way, Nick, I don't think you can tell the difference if you let your wife fill up a couple of different times. I don't think you can, and I can tell you this much. The chances of you blowing up that motor because you use the wrong fuel is about the same as you hitting the lottery two times in a row. It's just not going to happen. All righty?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, we don't tell anybody after we hot rod their cars and their diesels, we don't tell anybody that they've got to do something. If you hot rod them, you hot rod them. But obviously, if there's a difference in power and performance, I'll bet you if you let your wife put fuel in it, you'll not be able to tell the difference 2 out of 3 times. So.
What about the gas mileage?
Nothing. Everything on your gas mileage has to do with that foot with 5 toes. My wife can get 2 miles to
1 minute.
My wife can get 2 miles a gallon better on my diesel than I can.
Same here.
Yeah.
You mind if I ask you about the additive that some gas stations put in if it's adding to the fuel economy or if it's just cleaning the injectors and not really? It's better to use cheaper gas.
I can answer that real simple for you, but I got to take a break. I buy the cheapest gas I can. I have a fleet of perhaps company vehicles, plus my kids and my grandkids and all that kind of stuff. We have a fleet of 30. Got a lot of grandkids. And I've got a lot of family. And I tell them the same thing. I have a gas app on my phone. And when we left Payson, diesel was $2.95, and in town it's 20 cents cheaper. When I came into town, then I went to that Circle K, and it was back up 20 cents.
Right.
It was just that fast.
Right.
So to answer your question, I put the cheapest gas in the Camaro. I put cheap gas in the Jaguar, but I cannot do the twin turbo, which is 150 mile an hour car.
Right.
So and if I blow that motor up, it's going to cost me some bucks.
That's some money.
So anyway, that's the best I can do, Nick. Bernard and Tony, I'm so sorry, but I'll be back, and I'm going to get Bernard first and Tony second, and we're going to be quick. All righty. Let me see where we're at. 43 minutes after the hour, and just like I promised, I got to do what I promised. Bernard, you're first. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I'll make this quick. I have a Jeep, a 99 Jeep Grand Cherokee 4.0 six-cylinder. And I'm having an intermittent RPM problem, started like Monday. I think I finally got it to stay screwed up yesterday. I took it for a couple hours drive, and it took about an hour to get messed up. But if I put it in park, and it's normally 700 RPMs in idle, I put it in park, and she's up there, wants to idle at 14.
Okay, hold on. You've got me confused already. Is this problem related to the different readings on the tach, or is your tach going away and it shows no RPM? So kind of clarify that.
No, I'm just watching the tachometer, and right now she's sitting on 14. If I turn the air conditioner on, she'll bounce up to 18 for a couple seconds, then come back down to 14, and then bounce up to 18. But as long as I leave the air conditioner off, she'll stay at 14.
Okay. Is the compressor cycling by chance? Do you have the fan switch on low?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. In order to control the idle on a fuel injecting car, we open and close in an air orifice. So we're adding more air to raise the idle. I'm not real concerned about your 700 to 1400. But what I think might be happening is in this kind of climate, as soon as you turn on your air, it's going to get cold fast, and then the compressor is going to be shut off. Well, as we turn the compressor on and off, on and off, then all of a sudden we got this wild variation of idle. And so the computer's having a tough time keeping up with all of that. Now try this. run the fan speed on high, as fast as you can, and tell me if the problem's still there. Because if, and I know you're going to get cold, you can roll down the windows or whatever, but if that's how I would test it, I'd go drive it, run the fan speed on high, and it goes away. And then I go down to low, like Bernard tells me, and all of a sudden I've got a cycling compressor. I get out, I open up the hood, and I can see the compressor go on and off, and the idle goes with it, on and off. We're done. The air conditioning system is cycling, and in this time of the year, that's normal. So just try it on fan speed high and see if that makes a difference. And if the answer is it doesn't do it when I run the fan speed. Oh, and not recirculatory. This is not recirculatory. I don't want to recirculate it. And you can roll the windows down too. The question is if the fan speed's on high, does it change it? And if so, I'm right. And the answer is turn the fan speed up. If you want more air, turn the fan speed up. But this time of the year, I don't know why you're running your air at all. So, I mean, I'm a hot-blooded guy, and I'm not running my air right. But anyway, I am quite sure I'm on the right track. I'm quite sure. What part of town do you live in, Bernard?
I'm in Surprise.
Okay. Let me see. Who have I got in Surprise up there? You might call S&S Tire and ask them if they want to look at it, because they've got some pretty good dykes and aestheticians. They do more than tire. But ask them if there's somebody else in the general area. You might try Auto Dynamics, and they're in Sun City as well. Auto Dynamics, and that would be a good place to start both places. But try it my way first. Let's do a little bit of experiment first, okay?
I will. Thank you very much.
You betcha. Tony, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to pick your brain on how concerned I should be about a noisy torque converter on a 99 F350 with the 7.3.
Nate's got, hold on, Nate. Calm down a bit. He's got both hands in the air. He's standing up doing jumping jacks. Okay, go ahead.
99's had a flaw internally on the torque converter that they made noise.
Yes. Yes.
And if you still have one of those, wow.
If it's still on the road, wow.
Well, and for what it's worth, I've seen manufacturers reman those converters, and it still has the noise. So guys who aren't paying attention or giving you the best quality converter, you know, you still get that noise. But anyway, overall, you shouldn't, at this point of the game, be concerned at all because you've made it this far. We were replacing those under warranty at the dealer when they first came out because they were noisy.
What brand do you put in on your trucks?
Ford, again, or aftermarket.
That's a long time after.
Yeah.
So we have a different part number on that converter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what happens if he continues to drive it? What happens if he pulls it out of overdrive?
I've never seen one come apart. They're just noisy at idle. It's when the torque converter locks, they quiet up. So you'll hear that noise up until the torque converter engages, and then it's quiet.
Okay.
It's quiet. So,
well, that's good to hear, because it's been that way since I purchased the truck about 15 years ago.
There you go.
And yeah. I pull her hard, and I service it often, but it's been there for 100,000 miles, so...
So that tells me that noise was a inconvenience as far as the ear goes, but yet Ford didn't have any reliability with that. So yeah, you've got the record here, I think.
But if he's had the transmission service, are we going to shed any metal
that
would have been in the pan?
Not that I've
would
seen.
The filter have got it before it hit the pan?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Fair enough.
But I don't think it's going to shed any metal, because again, it's a defect that Ford knew about, but yet never destroyed a trans that I saw. So.
And that might answer the question.
No,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Tony.
Yeah, no, it hasn't shed any metal. I dropped the pan on my first service, and it looked relatively clean for what it was. And then since then, I put a bung and a plug in the pan, and I just drain the torque converter in the pan, and I don't mess with the filter anymore.
Okay.
Biggest
and
thing
I do use AMSOIL synthetic.
Okay.
Biggest thing on that trans is keep the temperatures down and happy and pull with it. Yeah, you're doing great. So.
You know, another thing, too, that Ford has an option that comes with that transmission. The radio has slightly heavier volume, louder volume, hold on, than the other cars and trucks.
No, it does not.
I know. But I got Tony to laugh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Tony, you know what? I'm gonna synopsize what Nate said. He wouldn't worry about it. Have I covered that for you?
Yeah.
Okay, just don't worry about it. Turn up your radio louder. You got a couple decibels extra.
And if, yeah.
Good
if,
to hear. Thanks, guys.
Okay. You bet. Thank you, Tony. You know what? We hit a home run on that one.
That was
if I don't, I couldn't have answered that without you there. All righty. Well, I have one other. I actually have two. Autodynamics, we talked about, and they're Sun City's largest and most trusted shop. They've been around since 1982, and I've known Chuck, the owner, since 1968. So I've known this family for a very long time. North side of Grand, west of 99th Avenue, a great shop to go to. Here's another one I got to tell you about, Action Auto. Do you know where that is?
Action Auto, yeah.
It's I-17 in Deer Valley.
Yeah.
Tom was my salesman. Remember the old engine analyzers, the scopes?
Yeah.
And people would come in and say, put it on the scope.
I wish I had one.
Yeah, I wish I had one that worked.
Yeah.
But he sold those, and I bought two from him. And nice. They did pretty good.
Yeah.
But you had to go through the process. And that took 20 minutes.
Right.
So, but anyway, Tom is where, that's where I met him. But Action Auto, he's a full service family owned auto repair shop, Deer Valley and I-17 since 1983. And I knew him before then. So it's a good shop. So if you're in that area of I-17 in Deer Valley and you need a car repair shop that does gasoline, then Action Auto Repair would be a good shop for you. We're going to take a break and do I have to take a break now?
No, you're. This is the top of the hour.
That's right. Thank you, Gil. I've lost track. Okay, Jim, how can I help you, Jim?
Yes, good morning, Mark. Got another Super Duty issue going on at the moment. The vehicle is a 2016 F-250 with a 6.2 liter gas engine. My wife and I bought it used just a few months ago. We finally got it out of town towing our trailer and experienced going uphill. At one point, it did downshift into second gear. The RPMs were getting up around 4,500, 5,000, and all of a sudden we were starting to hear this kind of a pulsating noise, kind of a rattle, kind of a tapping, not a real rhythmic tapping. And it was coming from more on the passenger side, my wife's side. And then as soon as it would upshift, RPMs would go down, then it would totally be gone. So we got back from our trip, took the trailer off, and then I manually ran it through some of the frontage road and whatever nearby to where I could get it up to 4,500, and I would keep hearing the same sound. I folded down the glove box so I could see, like, the heater core and the AC core inside. And it was a little bit louder, and listening to it over and over again, it almost had the sound like boiling water, but yet it was
okay. Kind of a pulsating okay. sound. So we've got a time constraint here. We got a time constraint. Jim, hold on. This is a noise that you can make happen. So really and truly, the easy part of this is take somebody for a drive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the only option we got. If you can make it do on command, and it's a high RPM thing, then it doesn't make any difference that you open the glove box or whatever. That doesn't make any difference to us. We're good enough to know if it's transmission-related, if it's engine-related, if it's pinging, if it's knocking, or whatever. The second part of that equation has to do with the trailer weight and the gross combined weight, which is the truck loaded and the trailer loaded. But I listened carefully, and he said after he dropped the trailer, he still had the noise.
Still had the noise, yeah.
So I don't know what part of town you're in, but just show somebody what you're talking about, because we're not going to be able to diagnose the noise, clearly.
I'd be willing to listen to it if he wants to bring it over. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So tell him where you're at.
We're 23rd Avenue, Parkside, just off I-17, south of Pinnacle Peak.
South of Pinnacle Peak. And it's just a matter of driving it.
Yeah.
Make sure you can know how to make it happen. You're going to drive first. We're going to sit in the passenger seat. We're going to watch you. Then we want to drive.
Yep.
And then we go from there.
Yep.
So that's – thank you. Thank you for that. Okay.
Yeah.
Dean, you're up next.
Yeah, I've got a quick question on a 2015 Avalon, Toyota Avalon hybrid.
Okay.
And it had been oil changed when we bought it. I've changed it once at 10,000 miles. And it's due again at 10,000, and just, I don't know why, I Googled it as to the interval, because the first changer wasn't real sure of it. And according to the Google search, it said every 30,000. So I'm confused, and I'm hoping you can help me out.
Well, the hybrid goes back and forth between electrical and gas. It's a very difficult decision, because we don't know how often you're climbing a hill and you're into the gas side versus how often you're using the electric side of your hybrid. If I were you, how many miles a year are you driving?
Oh, very low at, you know, with the COVID and everything. But I suppose we probably average about 7,000 a year.
Okay. I'd probably use a semi-synthetic, and I'd change it in April. You're going to go through the summer with fresh oil. You do it once a year. You do it in April based on your miles. I was going to put you in synthetic, but the synthetic oil is good for 20,000 miles or so, so you're going to be taking a really good oil and dumping it early. A semi-synthetic's more in your 7,000-mile useful range. So a semi-synthetic once a year in April, I think you'll be just fine as long as the parameters stay the same. You're in Arizona, you're driving 7,000 miles a year, and you're using the hybrid normally. I think that would what the advice I'd give you.
Easy advice is, when in doubt, over-maintain.
And that's true.
Yeah.
And we're doing that.
Yeah.
Because we're speeding you up, but I don't want you to go through four seasons with the same oil.
Exactly.
And I think we've kind of, with a semi-synthetic, the difference is conventional's cheap. It's a short term. It's about 3,000 miles. A semi-synthetic, well, actually, it's 3 to 5. Semi-synthetic is from 5 to 7,500, 8,000. Then the synthetics go from 9,000 all the way up, depending on the car, to 15,000.
Yep.
So each oil has its different interval, and you fit in a square box. And I've been trained by oil guys from Chevron, and so I kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have any questions, I'm happy to help you on the email. Mark at MarkSalem.com, and put down car question in the subject line. Car question. Well, I really appreciate when you come to, because we do diesel questions, and you are far more advanced than I am. Far more advanced.
So I try.
Well, you bring something to the table. If we had a tranny guy here. Now, Alger, he's up north. I told you A&S Transmission. He's the biggest, what's a nice word for wiener? He is the biggest wuss in the whole wide world. I would love to have him come to the shop or come to the radio show.
He should.
And do, no.
No?
No, no.
He'd be laughing the whole show.
His name is Alger Stowers, and he owns A&S Transmission. Excuse me. And his wife is named Shelley. Shelley has the personality that belongs on radio, but she doesn't know anything about trannies. So Alger, he's just a big chicken, you know, just a big chicken. So anyway, so if you want transmission advice, A&S Transmission would be a good guy, at least on the north side of town. But if he doesn't call you back, then leave a message with his wife, Shelley, and she'll make sure he calls you back. Nate from Strictly Diesel, thanks for spending Saturday with me.
Thank you.
Mark at MarkSalem.com is my email address. If I offended you, then give us a call or send me an email, Mark at MarkSalem.com. And I'm really good with I'm sorry's, and my wife will vouch that Mark Salem knows how to say that.